Hello and welcome to another Deeper Way Dialogue. My name is Richard Cox. I'm here again with Tim Freak. And today we're going to discuss non-dualism. Good morning, Tim.
Just as you say those words, I can't help but just think, oh, the beautiful paradox that we're going to have a conversation, which is by definition a movement between two people about non-duality. And just suddenly seemed very pertinent, you know.
Yes, so I've said what we're not talking about, really. We're not talking about dualism today. So no dualism, non-dualism. So Tim, now I've confused everyone. Clear it up. What is this non-dualism thing that we're talking about or not talking about?
Okay, yeah. The phrase non-duality is a translation of the Sanskrit Advaita, not to. Advaita Vedanta is a form of Indian philosophy. Goes back a long way, has a prior heritage. It's become very, very popular in a new form in the West really recently. I mean, it's always been around, but it's really taken off over the last 10, maybe 20 years. The essential idea of not to is that everything in our experience is of subject and object, this, not that, in and out, up and down, everything's these polarities. And the idea, the essential idea in non-duality is that there is a oneness which unites all of that. So there's something before the two-ness, and that's a oneness, and that we awaken to that. But because one implies two, they prefer to say not to. And in that way, the Advaitic tradition is a Eastern version of what in the West was called the via negativa, the negative way, which was about denying everything until there's nothing left. Not this, not that. In the Indian tradition, is this neti neti, not this, not this, not this, not this. So it's not until it's not two, and it's not even one, it's beyond all thought, and there's this awakening to something. That's...
So you've said it comes from India and Advaita. And you've also, you've studied the world's mystical traditions, the perennial philosophy, and you're saying it's found in other places. So are all these traditions, whether it's Sufism or Christian mysticism, are they all non-dual? And if so, is there something specific about the Indian mysticism which takes on a particular flavor of non-duality?
They all have a different flavor, but they're all something similar. That's the essence of this idea of a perennial philosophy. So, you know, we're going to probably talk about this more later, I'm sure, but I'm a paralogical philosopher, which is more akin to, say, the Taoist tradition, I would say, in its essence, which is it's two and not two at the same time. That's the mystery. So it's Tao and it's yin and yang at the same time. So for me, I look at all these traditions and I can see in one way, oh, look, all these... The mystical heart, the deep mystical heart in all traditions is saying the same thing. And the reason they're saying the same thing is that it's people who are having similar experiences of awakening and then expressing it in their different ways. But also they're all different. There's not a monological, it's all the same. So the Indian tradition, and not just the Indian tradition, is made up of individual people. So Nisargadatta is different to Ramana Maharshi. Modern new non-dual teachers are in the West are different to either of those, and going back, if you've got Sankara and other people before that, so, and that's very different to, say, Rumi, who is also pointing towards non-duality but is a very embodied and passionate and love-based and a poet.
Yes, I mean, Rumi was who was in my mind actually in the Sufis, because they do seem in philosophical principle very similar to the Indian non-dualists, but in flavor very different. There's all this passion in Sufi poetry which you don't get coming through.
I think that if there's a difference that's worth, other than just flavor, like you said, if there's a significant difference, it's between the, what I would say, the monological non-dual tradition, which is the reality is simply non-dual. It's all just oneness, and that's it. And then there's another view which is more nuanced, which I call paralogical, which is going, it is both all one and many at the same time. So it's both, in the Buddhist tradition, it's the idea, Nirvana is the emptiness, the non-dual, samsara is the manyness, it's the all the flavors and experiences of individuality, and they're both the same. So emptiness is form, form is emptiness, is at the heart of Mahayana Buddhism. Theravadan Buddhism tends to take a more extreme, just no, it's just non-dual. The self doesn't exist, it's just this. That difference is important. So when you get someone like Rumi, he is able to move as I want to, between, oh, look, there is all, it's all this one thing, it's all non-dual, and I am here as Tim in relationship to it, and that relationship is one of love with my beloved, for instance. So that's, and so it's relational and non-relational at the same time, and you can move between those poles.
Okay, so that's a fairly big split then in perennial yes. philosophy going through the ages.
Yes, I think so. I think it's a, you know, this is where I've ended up being quite critical of things that previously I wrote about in a non-critical way,
yeah.
because I've started to understand and go into all of those.
Okay.
Those differences. And also, you know, with non-duality, I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about this now, but I mean, it's not what it's coming from experience. Really, that's the root. And the experience which people associate with non-duality is not just one thing. There's different things. So one experience that people often, I think, talk about when they've said they've had a non-dual awakening can be the experience of, which you could describe as passive witnessing. So if I go into that experience now, there's a place where I am the experiencer witnessing this flow of life. Now, my normal place is that my attention is in Tim and I am Tim communicating with you. But if I take my attention back and I'm just aware of myself as awareness, as this presence witnessing this, there's just one flow, like a film. Like if you go into the film, mm-hmm. there's the hero and there's the villain and then you come out and it's just colored lights. It's just a flow of thing, and it's all one celluloid, and you can come back and then it's like, oh, that's all one. Now actually, of course, there's a very important duality there actually, because there's experiencer and experiences, but often people mean that. So for instance, a very influential non-dual teacher for me was Ramesh Balsekar, which I write about in my book How Long Is Now. When I met him, he really opened me up to that experience and more, and it's an amazing thing. His whole teaching was, look, there's no doer. So it's, and that's a great way to experience that. You just suddenly go, look, Tim is happening. Like in the film, it's like, it's all just happening. And you step back and everything is just happening. And when you get that, it's like, wow, that's quite something. And it's a very different perspective. And you're just looking at the rawness of the moment. And then there's another experience which people often talk about, and I think when they enter non-duality, which is taking the attention back away from the experience altogether into the experiencer, into the I, and finding that if you do that, that it has no form. It is and in it's the nirvana, the emptiness, and so that what's looking hasn't got a color or a shape, or what's listening makes no noise. And you come back into that formless presence, and that is non-dual, because there's no divisions in it. It's just being, and we experience it as just our being. And that's very much the going back into the emptiness, the nirvana, although it's not empty in that sense of being cold and empty. It's just presence, really. It's and people talk about that. And then finally, I think there's another thing again, which is when you see the emptiness is the form, or that presence is the whole thing. And that's very hard to describe, where the two become one and you see, oh, and there's a level in which the experiencer and the experiences are just the same thing. And you've kind of moved beyond all concepts altogether. And these are different ways. And then finally, the one which I'm actually interested in feels like when you can see, look, all of that is different places you can stand, including coming back to the human experience where you started, which is just being an individual, not just, but being an individual on this journey. And you're able to move between those states rather
than... To ask about another one, in your How Long Is Now, the biographer book, you write about an experience as a teenager of opening up to this transcendent sense of love, that it feels like the whole universe is arising in an infinite ocean of love. And that's not an experience that's exclusive to you. It's an experience people have written about through the ages. Where do you sit that in relation to the non-dual experiences you're describing?
Yeah, I would say from my own experiences, that is a relational experience, in that it's very much what happens to the individual in relationship to the oneness. So when I first woke up, although there was a feeling of oneness, it was probably better to describe it as communion. There's a feeling of there is a fundamental oneness which I am connecting with, and that is full of love. And I am both the oneness loving Tim and Tim loving the oneness. So it's like the Rumi thing. And so I think when you first wake up, there can be, if you have a big awakening, there can be that connection with love. If you then go into the non-dual, it can get a bit cold, because if you just retreat into it, and lose connection with the humanity, then you do, in a sense, I think, can leave the love behind, which is why a lot of non-duality is missing the love. And a lot of people who, sometimes I see people who are in non-duality and teaching non-duality, and they seem a bit disconnected to me. Mm-hmm. Because they've left their humanity behind and gone into it. And then, sorry, just to complete, it feels like, but when you make the journey back in, which is what I'm teaching at the moment, which I'm exploring myself, find that and come back in, then the big love kicks in once again.
Sure. So I'd like you to talk about that in just a moment, because I know you've become critical of non-duality, maybe in its modern form, maybe more than in its modern form. I'd like you to go into that. But just prior to doing so, can you describe your journey into it? I know it sort of maybe accumulated to this meeting of Ramesh Balsekar, the Indian guru, and you finding that a transcendently important experience in understanding the witness and the idea of no doer. But also, I think something left you feeling a bit cold there. I think you witnessed an interaction of Ramesh Balsekar and a woman who had been suffered a bereavement recently.
So, and I tell this story at more length in How Long Is Now, but the real non-dual part of my journey took off with I Am That by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, which I came across in the back of another very influential book that I read called Who Dies by Stephen Levine. And because I was working with people who were dying then. And there was a little passage from the book, and something about it made me go, what's this? And I had to send away to India. It was very, you know, non-duality, no one heard of it then. And in anyone I knew anyway. So I sent away to India for this book, I Am That, by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, whose name kind of translates as Mr. Natural, which I kind of like. And it just blew me away. The philosophy was on a completely new level for me. And I bought copies for all my friends from India and gave them away. I was like, wow, this is great. And had a lot of experiences around that philosophy, and particularly one I relate in the book about when I was making music, which I was a musician then, of repeating this phrase which he got in the book of You Are Not a Person, which I used eventually in Lucid Living. It's one of the big lines in Lucid Living, which catapulted me experientially into a place where I could see that I was experiencing Tim, but I was more than Tim. And that what I essentially am is the source of Tim. And that was I'd known that, I'd touched that, I'd experienced it, but I'd never seen it that clearly. And that lasted for a while, and then it passed. And then when I met Ramesh Balsekar by complete accident. It's a long story. I'd been to see the Indian guru Sai Baba, didn't like it, and ended up by a complete bizarre set of coincidences, grabbing two mornings with Ramesh Balsekar, this ex-banker in Mumbai. And he was able to point me to these experiences I've been describing in a way that no one had till then. So I could see that the place to find the place where I was not a person was you're not a doer was a very good pointer. And I could just come back into this passive witness. And then from the passive witness, I could explore the other things of the emptiness and indeed the total unity. I think very quick, I was very excited by that. I mean, I really felt like this huge thing. And of course, also because I by nature, I want to understand the world, and my world was studying spirituality. I suddenly had this great insight into all of the mystical traditions of the world. And without that, I probably couldn't have written the books on Gnosticism and all the Jesus mysteries and Jesus and the Lost Goddess came from the direct experiences I was having, which had been initiated. But there was a sense of, there was an uneasiness straight away, and I kind of did that to it to begin with. Oh, don't look at that because this is so exciting. And as you said, one of the things was watching Ramesh with a woman who just had a bereavement and had brought her husband's ashes, young woman, to India. And he was like, oh, forget it, it doesn't matter. And what is love? You know, love. Love's just the opposite to hate. And something in me was like, I'm not sure that's right. I think it's more than that. I think you're missing something here. And that, I think, has gone on. That little tiny moment has gone on and got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it's felt like, no, there is something one-sided and dangerous and often heartless. And this, you know, it's great that you can see that you are much, much more than just a person, but actually the person is really important, not to be dismissed, but beautiful.
And this is where you depart from a lot of the modern non-dualism, at least. And something I always find amusing whenever you, I think the kind of conferences you attend, they find it good sport probably to sit you down next to someone who represents that very typical non-dual position and watch the dialogue emerge. And I think it's always interesting to me to read the comments on the YouTube video, and I don't doubt that this video will be any exception to it. There's always comments who say that the person you're talking to, whether it's Gary Weber or Lisa Candle, Lisa's really got it in a way that, you know, Tim hasn't. She's seen that there's no doer there, and Tim, he's caught up in his ego. And the next comment will read, no, this person Tim's discussing with, they're in this very naive place and understanding that they're just wrapped up in the initial stages of it, and Tim's seen through that and returned to his personhood. And it seems like an unending, unanswerable, I don't know, debate or disagreement or perception.
Yeah, we all see where we are. There's no ways about that. I mean, you know, obviously for me, it feels like, look, I've fallen in love with our humanity. Look, it drives me mad too. It drives me mad being Tim. And some days I can look at the human beings and, like, you know, it's like living with 7 billion delusional monkeys on a planet, and we're so, oh, so mediocre and so, you know, everything. But despite all of that, you know, I love us and I love life. And there is a very negative, you can go right back to in the ancient West as well. We was doing the Gnostics. It was very clear there was a negative gnosis and there was a positive gnosis. And I think that goes through the via negativa, the via positiva. And the negative gnosis is going, get away from the separateness and you can get to the oneness and it'll be right. And you hear people all the time, you know, it's like as if you could just dissolve back in, the whole thing's just been a dream of no significance whatsoever. We'll get back home and just go, oh God, what was that mad trip we were on? And that's very, very popular. And often people don't even know they're thinking that because they picked it up as if that's just the way it is. And it's inherent in the very concepts we're using. And I don't feel that. I feel that what we're in here is an evolutionary journey of huge import and significance and full of meaning. And that we wake up to the oneness through the individuality. And that the whole point of the evolution of form has been to develop these distinct conscious individuals, which is what we are. And that we need to become more distinct and more individual and more conscious, and through that to wake up to this non-dual oneness, which is from which everything is arising and to which everything is going. And so that our humanity is not, you know, I want to come to its defense all the time. And I want to come to its defense in a very heartfelt way. I feel the struggles of the world matter. It matters to me that the Rohingya are suffering in Myanmar right now. It matters to me that my daughter has an ecologically sustainable world to grow up into. It's not like, nah, it's just form. You know, it doesn't feel like that to me. And we're missing something really important. And so if our spirituality helps us escape that by offering, I think it's kind of a la la land. And, you know, if people need to go there or they want to go, you know, I'm not criticizing anyone for that. It's everyone has that free will. But for me, I want to say the opposite. I want to be a passionate advocate for humanity.
Do you see people through your work who go into that aspect of non-dualism and then emerge out of it. And
all the time.
Yeah.
And I you know, at first I was seen as a non-dual teacher because I was speaking about oneness. My aspiration was to wake people up to oneness. Now my aspiration is to wake people up to oneness and help them engage with separateness. And I get more and more people who are quite damaged. The phrase that came to me once when doing one of the non-dual conferences was non-duality, this neo-non-duality, this extreme non-duality, it is the cure for being stuck in separateness, and that causes suffering. So it is the cure for the suffering of separateness, but the side effects of the cure are awful. And where it leaves people is high and dry without a life. You know, one of the little stories which touched me deeply was at Science and Non-Duality in America, where I'm just about to go again, and doing a pre-conference workshop there, and a young guy in his 20s coming up to me and saying, you know, thank you so much for what you've shown me, because I now feel like I can have children. And that captured it for me, because you know, he had reached the point, he was intelligent, he thought it through, and he'd gone, well, why would you do it? Why'd you have kids? Why would you bring people into this pernicious illusion that we need to wake up from? And that was the message he got. Now, it doesn't, you know, it's a bit like the other side of non-duality is a bit like the scientific objectivism, which on the surface of it sounds great. Look, the wonders of the universe. Oh, and by the way, it's all here accidentally. You're going to die and nothing means anything. So unless you look deeply, you don't find that, but it's there and it will affect you. Same with non-duality. A lot of people who are talking in non-duality make it sound fantastic, which it is. But when you go into its implications, you suddenly find this very negative undercurrent, which is holding it up. So I get a lot of damaged people who've found this, and I was just on that phone just a few days ago on the Skype with somebody in America who was going, yeah, I was really struggling because it felt like I didn't want to lose my personhood because I'm a dad. I like being a dad and I want it, but I wanted this awakening and I felt like I was stuck between these two. Whereas it feels to me like you're not stuck between these two. They're both true. They're both here right now. And in fact, the more you discover this wonderful non-dual ground of being, the more empowered you can be as an individual, not less, more. And then you can bring the love. When you combine the two, that's the love. And when the love pours through, that's when we can really transform our human journey, not just for ourselves, but for each other.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Tim. I'm sure people have opinions on this, okay, because non-duality
I'm sure they
evokes
will.
A lot of opinions. So I'd be very happy to hear them in comment sections and Facebook, whatever. And we can.
Can I just say one thing that's just come up from that? You know, because I'm thinking back, there's a key element for me, and this is not just to do with non-duality, but it's deep inside me, and it's deep inside what I explore, and therefore what I share with others. And that's the old-fashioned word for it is service. I mean, it's love, but it is service. It's the desire to be of service to life, to others. And there is something about any form of spirituality, and you see it a lot, especially in the East, where it's about you. Just. It is about you, and it should be. That's paralogical. It's both. But it's not just. It's also about giving. And that's the nature of love, isn't it? Love feels great, but it's also about giving it. And, I mean, the reason I left my guru when I was in my 20s was because it was all about you can have this experience of peace. You can withdraw into this place where it's all right. But there was nothing about serving. There was nothing about going out and taking it out to others and to the world. And that what didn't feel right to me. And the same with this non-duality. I don't hear a lot of service being talked about. Because why would you? And that, I think, is what marks out an evolutionary approach to spirituality. And certainly the one I'm interested in is about being all-embracing. So yes, the great non-dual oneness. And the journey of evolution from which has arisen from it, and which by realizing it, we can really take to a new level. And that happens by coming back into the world and sharing the love. And there's this very strong, you see in people like Gandhi, who was a big inspiration for me, you know, this endless desire to serve. And that feels really important, beautiful.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. I think this sets up a lot of points for consideration. Is non-duality internally consistent as a philosophy? Can a person live with this sense of their not being a doer all the time? Or is it something that we embrace at certain times or when we're discussing non-duality and then step back into being a doer for the rest of our lives and just pretend we don't in non-duality discussions?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I see that so much. And I see that amongst many of the non-dual teachers I hang out with. You know, I'm hanging out with somebody and they're like, good fun. They're human. We're meeting. We're in the both and. And then suddenly I'm listening to someone on a stage saying things which are quite honestly absurd if you thought it through.
Yeah, well, I'll just tell the story before we finish then that a friend of ours was at a non-dual conference and heard a speaker on stage talking about not having arrived at the conference because there was no journey, there was only this experience that was happening now, and then met them down the pub later where they were quite happy to divulge their life story as a story. And our friend said he had to metaphorically sit in his hands not to ask the question of like, but surely all this is an illusion, isn't it? Surely none of that actually happened. How do these two things line up? How do they not contradict each other? So yeah, and it's always my thought that do people go away from these non-dual discussions and then live consistently as not a doer? So be very happy to hear from people in comment sections, etc. on your opinions of this. Do you think Tim's ideas represent a break from non-duality? Are they consistent with it? Can you consistently live as not a doer? And perhaps we'll record something in the future reflecting on that.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. Yeah.
Great. Thanks very much, Tim. It's been fascinating.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks. Bye-bye.